your endeavors. So then, by their grace, then you one comes to that platform, like that. So, but when we say siddha or perfection, that always means bhava, because prema is then something else. It's beyond perfection. Perfection, basically, what we're meaning is that one is no longer conditioned. That means because we compare basically most everything to our material situation. So then perfection is getting out of this. Then prema is something else.
How does that transformation happen? What's that link?
That link then is bias, basically, from what I can see is Vishnu in the 10th canto. Then Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is explaining that it's actually when one, it's the same as he said before, it's simply desire, like that. The whole process is based on that desire. That's what will create the mercy. Now, that desire may be the prominent thing, one may be more or less expert at one's sadhana, but if the mood, that desire is consistent and strong, then that will be noted. Now, if in that desire is strong and it also reflects as very regulated, very clear, structured sadhana, then generally that person would be called a sadhana siddha. Right? Kripa siddha would be that his mood is good, he's trying his best, it may not be the ideal, it may be okay, but by the Lord's mercy because of the mood, then he comes to the platform of bhava. Then Prabhupada also mentions another archan siddha, that by the worship of the deity, then the deity is so pleased with that just mood and everything, that then one comes to that platform of bhava. Right? But then here he's saying that to skip bhava and go directly to prema, that's very rare. So it's being thrown in as an option, otherwise someone will maybe ask, well, what about, you know, so just so that it's put on the side, it's like, don't worry about it. Just like the demons killed by the Lord. Now, they'll go to the Brahman, you know, that platform, because they're completely purified by his touch. So they have no material contamination. Now, at the time when being in the Brahman, they want to do something, because no one sits there for very long, then the impersonalists, when they remember activity, they only remember the material activity. There is no spiritual, because they've already rejected it. So they go back to the material world. The demons killed by Krishna, then generally because the demoniac mentality, what was prominent in their lives was material activity. But because they were killed by the Lord, they could remember the Lord. And so if they remembered the Lord, then from that Brahman platform, they would go to Vaikuntha. But because it's so rare, it's not recommended as your practice. You don't think, I'll become the biggest demon, so Krishna will kill me, then I'll go to the Brahman, then I'll remember him, and then I'll go to Vaikuntha. So therefore, even though technically it's possible, it's not recommended, so it's not even discussed. So in the same way as this mercy coming to prema, it's possible, but it's not something one would count on. One wants the Lord's mercy to come to the platform of bhava, because from bhava, then by that association, one will advance. So therefore, but one tries to do that through practicing proper sadhana, having proper attitude, worship of the deity. In this way, then one invokes the Lord's mercy, and then one comes to bhava. Now in that, if that attitude is there, where that determination to develop that love for Krishna, then one will very quickly get the association of the nitya siddhas. Because when Krishna comes in his passing, he always comes with his eternal associates. They already have that prema. So by their association, then one will develop it. But if one doesn't have that determination, then one will not get their association. So one will be in the spiritual world, Krishna's about, it's all happening, but it's not the driving force in you. It's something nice, it's very good, but it'll never get to the point of samadhi. So if the devotion is any less, or the smarana dasa is any less than samadhi, it won't carry you forward. You won't go into the apandas, which means then you'll be actually in the Lord's association, you'll become part of his pastimes. So that smarana dasa, then it has five levels, like in the meditation in dhyan. So samadhi is what's required. So if it's only occasional is there, or you know, more regular, or these and that, it's not enough to carry one through. So basically, the seems to be the key element is, just like here, is association. Basically, the whole process boils down to you have the desire and you keep good association, then basically you can guarantee it's going to work. But that's why offenses then are so important to avoid, especially Vaishnava aparad, because if one performs Vaishnava aparad, one loses the association of the devotees, which is the key to actually getting the Lord's mercy. So whether it's here or there, then that's always a key element. But in the spiritual world, because of the sincerity there, once one's come to the platform of prema, then even if an offense could be committed, Krishna will somehow or another get in the way and it won't happen. Right? But because the doorkeepers, they wanted to fight with the Lord, you know, because they were thinking, if God has all qualities, then he also must like to fight. And then his point is, but then who would he fight with? You know, no one's strong enough. You know, but then the doorkeepers, that's why they're there, because they're the biggest, the strongest. So they were thinking, well, we could fight with him, you know, if that would please him. So then when the four Kumaras came, because they had that desire, then Krishna came just a moment late. If he had walked in just before they cursed, they would have forgotten about the curse and just, you know, offered prayers to the Lord and everything like that. But he walked in after the curse, then came, so that it wouldn't get worse than that. Then it got all that. So then it was a matter of, okay, then they have the choice how they, you know, they would come to the material world. But because their idea was to serve him in the way of fighting, then by coming as demons, then that would be the natural way to fulfill that. Because also it said three lifetimes as demons or seven as a devotee. So then they're thinking, well, three lifetimes is a shorter time to be away from their post than seven. Well, if he said three lifetimes as a devotee or seven as a demon, they would have taken three as a devotee. You know, so it wouldn't have fulfilled that need. Yes?
I want to avoid missing the association of the devotees. So I'm trying to analyze what's actually happening by offenses. I mean, I see three categories. One is that one makes offenses, material desires take over, and basically one just goes out in the material world because that's the place where it happens, and here it's not happening. The second one is one sees that the devotees are actually in between me and the sense gratification, so they become my enemies. So mm-hmm. then again, one mm-hmm. is. And the third one is one can live in the association of devotees, but one doesn't see that actually there's association of devotees. Everybody's just...
But it would be similar to the first. I would say that first and the third would be very similar in that because of the material desires coming up, one doesn't see the importance like that.
Or one doesn't see who is who and what.
Yeah, that would be, but that means that would have to, either one would already be at that platform or one would have dropped to that platform. But in both cases, the covering would be material desire, like Ramachandra Khan. Then... when he made that offense, I forget who it was, but one of the Vaishnavis who, she always chanted, and just, even if she's not thinking about it, she chants. So he was giving lectures, he was like the senior most devotee in Vrindavan, he would give, you know, lectures, and then she was sitting and listening. So he got annoyed that she's chanting, and he was trying to explain that, you know, chanting is a service, and they're both important, but that chanting is, when you're hearing, you know, Bhagavatam, then you don't chant your japa. And so he got very upset, yes.
So we shouldn't stop devotees from chanting japa during class?
This was, well, I would say as well, in one sense you could take it if, I mean, we could go in a few options here. One is that if they are on that Mahabhagavat platform where that chanting is so much in the background that they can be focused on whatever else they're doing and chant at the same time, then I would say you wouldn't stop them chanting. Two is that in here is that the principle is it was a lady also, and they can do many things at once. So if it's a man chanting japa in the class, I would say he can't be chanting and listening at the same time, unless you have a good idea that he's a Mahabhagavat, you know, like that. If it's a lady, then I wouldn't worry about it. you know, because somehow or another they can, you know, talk on the phone, talk to you, cook, and take care of the kid at the same time. How? That's only they know, but, you know. So I would say is that one won't appreciate, one will find the devotees is somehow or another getting in the way of some kind of material desire. One's position, one wanted to be something, someone else took it, there was some politics or this kind of a thing, that there's something that's being created. So that way then you don't see. The other is that the material desire becomes more prominent, so you don't have an interest in the association. Or you could probably say a combination of that. Having that associate, then the devotees get in the way of that. So they may at first get in the way of actual, you know, spiritually connected activities. You know, something that would have or could have a political element involved in it. You know, something social, something managerial, you know, anything that would have something that the physical situation could stop your gaining what you're looking for. So that could create that. But still the same process, the material desires will come up, one will get bewildered by that, and then those will become more prominent. So either one will just be enamored by that, or that one will see the devotees are in the way of attaining that. You know, so it would follow a similar pattern, though exactly it might start this way or that way, but it'll end up the same, you know. Is that okay? Okay. So Lord Chaitanya's, I think here, yeah. If by good fortune a living entity develops faith in Krishna, he begins to associate with devotees. When one is encouraged in devotional service by the association of devotees, one becomes free from all unwanted contamination by following the regulative principles and chanting and hearing. When one is freed from all unwanted contamination, he advances with firm faith. When firm faith in devotional service awakens, a taste for hearing and chanting also awakens. After taste is awakened, a deep attachment arises. And from that attachment, the seed of love for Krishna grows in the heart. When that ecstatic emotional stage intensifies, it is called love of Godhead. Such love is life's ultimate goal and the reservoir of all pleasure. If one actually has the seed of transcendental emotion in his heart, the symptoms will be visible in his activities. That is the verdict of all the revealed scriptures. Okay, so here he's showing that the succession to prema through bhava. So basically he's establishing that we accept this principle that we're going to get to prema through bhava. And so then he showed here the whole process from shraddha to prema. Right? From a taste, then after a deep attachment, the seed of love of Godhead grows in the heart. So that's rati, that's bhava. When that ecstatic emotion stage intensifies, called love of God. Remember we were saying that when the element of the anubhava and the sanchari bhava increase, because one's position when one's in Surup Siddhi, you have your Stai Bhav. So that's established there. So now the Vibhav will give that interest to be involved, but the actual, the tasting of the emotion basically will come from Anubhav, the activity, and the resultant Sanchari Bhavas that come from that. The physical, that's another thing. That just manifests in the body, but what's going on in the mind is from what he's mentioned here is the anubhav and the sanchari bhava. So when that intensifies, when that's mixed with rati, then that rati then, and intensifies, turns into prema. So then he's saying here, when the ecstatic emotional stage intensifies, so that means that would be bhava with anubhav and sanchari bhava. Then it's called love of God. So he's showing that it's going through there. So this element that one would get the mercy directly and avoid that stage, then generally it's not. It means it may be there, but what we're saying is that we ourselves wouldn't take it that is going to be our process. Right, so now here Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a karika. Just as iron shows its innate quality when the magnet comes close, so the minute consciousness, jiva, shows his natural tendency when he becomes favorable towards the supreme conscious living entity, Krishna. His natural tendency is pure love of Krishna. This quality of raga is perfect in the spiritual world. The material world is only a reflection of the spiritual world. The jiva, accepting unnatural qualities in the material world, produces a different type of raga towards the objects of the world, though raga itself is generated from his nature. So he's showing here is that as iron just automatically is attracted to the magnet, that's his natural, that's his nature, then in the same way is that the minute consciousness, so it's interesting. So the minute consciousness, and he said the jiva, right? So the jiva is minute consciousness. Right? So then shows its natural tendency by when becoming attracted to Krishna. So this element of raga or attachment, right? Because the magnet gets attached, and the metal gets attached to the magnet. So when that happens, then okay, that's its natural position. So, but that raga, if it's not applied properly, when one is in the conditioned state, when its natural raga of the living entity is applied on the material, the objects of this material world. We may say, well, it's not just the objects, it's the person, but actually the person's the soul. So it's not actually applied on the soul, it's applied on the object. Right? So you can, the gross, even though you can say, well, the subtle is not, you know, the object, but it's perceivable. Right? You can see the emotion, see the mind, you can see the ego, you can see the intelligence, you can see those symptoms of it working through the body. So the attachment is there, but the soul, then one has to have different vision to see that. So, but that attachment that one has, that's inherent to the soul. So to be attached, that's inherent. So that's the point is the problem is not attachment. The problem is the attachment is misdirected at the material energy as opposed to Krishna. So that's why when dealing with attachment, one has to be very careful, not you're destroying the principle of attachment, but you're changing it from improper attachment to proper attachment. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. Means the child is holding on to something else, he don't break his hand. Right? It's just a matter he shouldn't be holding on to what he is, and then he can hold on to the mother. Right? But if you break his arm, he can't hold on to the mother either. So the whole idea is that the impersonal path, it breaks attachment in the material world, but it also destroys the concept of qualities necessary for the natural attachment of the living entity in the spiritual world. So that's why when dealing with attachment, it has to be dealt with very carefully that you're taking it away from what's inferior and connecting it to what's superior. So one is speaking about the material condition that's not good. But you're not trying to destroy attachment. Does that make sense? As a principle. So that's why Krishna says by tasting a higher taste, you go up the lower. It's not a matter of destroying the concept of the lower that it's going to, that can help let go. But the main thing is to attract to a higher. Like Krishna is saying, okay, you'll go to the forest, you know, Arjuna, and you'll be, you know, situated there in your so-called peace. And then something will come up because you're kshatriya, you're going to fight anyway. Right? So his whole idea of that going there being peaceful, he's showing, no, but if you fight here and the battle connected with the Lord, that's then the proper use of your character, your qualities. So then does that make sense? But rag is inherent in the jiva. Right? So now the other half of the kartika. If the conditioned jiva does not destroy his subtle body, his pure love will not appear. Only after breaking the subtle body, the bhakti which appears is pure priti. Before this stage, bhakti attempting self-surrender by destroying the material identity and establishing the spiritual identity. Oh, wait a minute. has priti love as its quality, priti mayi, but cannot have priti as its essence, priti atmika. Okay, so then here we're having to remove the subtle body. Means here, so, because this subtle is means the mind, intelligence, and the false ego. But there's a real mind, there's a real intelligence, and there's a real ego. So the point is if you change basically the ego, because that's what creates the whole identity, gross and subtle, as I'm servant of Krishna, then the intelligence works for Krishna, the mind then accepts and rejects in connection to Krishna. Then that works. So, okay. So then that attraction, or here he's saying this love or affection that is there, that one is making this attempt, before it has actually been accomplished, is called priti mayi. But it won't be prema, because that is priti atmika. Okay, now here priti mayi is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. The original inhabitants of Vrindavan are attached to Krishna spontaneously in devotional service. Nothing can compare to such spontaneous devotional service, which is called ragatmika bhakti. When a devotee follows in the footsteps of the devotees of Vrindavan, his devotional service is called Raganuga Bhakti. If one follows in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, out of such transcendental covetousness, he does not care for the injunctions or reasoning of Shastra. That is the way of spontaneous love. There are two processes by which one may execute this Raganuga Bhakti, external and internal. The self-realized advanced devotee externally remains like a neophyte and executes all the Shastric injunctions, especially hearing and chanting. However, within his mind, in his original purified self-realized position, he serves Krishna in Vrindavan in his particular way. He serves Krishna 24 hours, all day and night. Actually, the inhabitants of Vrindavan are very dear to Krishna. If one wants to engage in spontaneous loving service, he must follow the inhabitants of Vrindavan and constantly engage in devotional service within his mind. Chaitanya Charitamrita 22, 149, 153, 156 to 57, and 59. The Kartika says, what is the difference between love, priti, of material objects, and love of Krishna? When the affection is directed from matter to Krishna, in a pure way it becomes love of Krishna. When the same affection is turned from Krishna towards matter, it is called material love or material attachment. In the stages from Rati to Mahabhav, this affection is intrinsic characteristic for each stage. There's an intrinsic characteristic for each stage. This sthayi bhava, qualified by relations such as dasya, attains the nature of rasa by mixing of the ingredients, anubhav, sattvika bhav, etc. Okay. So basically, is directed from matter to Krishna. So you're dealing with matter, but it's being directed towards Krishna. You're working with matter, but the purpose of doing it is to please Krishna. So then that's considered love of Krishna. But if it's turned from Krishna and you're directing that natural love at the material energy, like Krishna's not involved, then that is material attachment. That's material affection. So we see here is that love that is mentioned means prema is the specific stage. But the idea of just one is trying to direct it at Krishna, then that one sees that there is some glimmering of this kind of affection or attachment. It's growing in there. There's a taste and all that. So now in here he's mentioning that in performing this, that the Lord Chaitanya is explaining the original inhabitants. So following their footsteps, that's raga nuga, because they have raga, attachment for Krishna. So because there's so many different, definitions of it. You know, some get stuck in one and then it's a problem. But here's rag means attachment, so the residents of Vrindavan are attached to Krishna. But that's their life. Krishna is their life, and that attachment is the life of their service. We are trying to develop that kind of attachment. So therefore, we serve Krishna by following in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan in the way of their surrender. Therefore, it's rag anuga. Right? So externally, then it says, because it says it'll be followed both externally and internally. Externally, one will practice as if one's a neophyte. But internally, it is simply done to please Krishna. So it's so if here when it says, he does not care for the injunctions or reasoning of Shastra. Right? So one may take it, oh, I don't have to follow these things. But then in the next sentence, he says, externally, such a person acts like a neophyte and follows all the rules of the scripture. But the point is he's doing that because you need some form. This is the form given by Krishna. Krishna has given the scriptures, so that pleases him. But that the scriptures say this is the way of, this is the process, that's not what your inspiration is. That is pleasing to Krishna, that's what you're, what is there for. Does that make sense? Because the Shastras say, by doing this, you get freed, liberated from this, or freed from this, or so many different things, you get purified. That's not why he's doing it. Does that make sense? That's the point, is that his inspiration is not because of the so-called benefits that he's going to get from following that. You know, it's like, oh yes, you know, we'll stay up all night, we'll chant 64 rounds, you know, it'll be so purifying, so we'll, you know, advance. That's not the reason he's doing it. But it's sadhana, and you do that, Krishna's very pleased. Right? Because you're following a injunction, you know, increasing that to please Krishna, something special. But it's a matter of just, you have the time, you can hear and chant about Krishna, you like hearing and chanting about Krishna, that's why you're hearing and chanting about Krishna, to please him. You have more time, you'll chant more. Does that make sense? This is, will be the difference. Right? The one is that it's the rule, the other is that you like doing it. You like pleasing Krishna, yes.
Sometimes these marathons are staying up all night and this and that. It's ecstatic, but the problem is the next day, which means
yes.
There is big service, and then all of a sudden for a few days there's almost no service. So at the end of the week, if you take the whole equation, then the question is, what is better, steadiness or...
Means steadiness is always better. Because then that's something you can rely on. Because if you have a relationship with someone, you want that steadiness. But still that you can do more, that you're willing to go beyond, to give up your own like position or own facility or own satisfaction for something more, that's also special. So that's why those things are less often. But at the same time, is generally that kind of service, they're only taking part of the package. Means the Ekadasi package.
Or the Prabhupada marathon, and that's it now for a year. We've done the books and...
That's there. Yeah. Means generally you sleep in January, but then you start distributing books again from February. You know, it's like that. So.
And then you go to India. Oh. And every March you're in India. April you get back and you're sick. And then it gets hot, so then there's the festivals, the Rath Yatra, so there's a lot of stuff going on.
You forgot the beach.
Yes. A lot of stuff going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in other words, utsava means something that lifts you above the sava, or the pains of the material world. So it's something that you can push yourself beyond what you normally do. It's just like if you... Every day you eat, and okay, you're going to die by, you know, if you don't eat by 9 o'clock, right? But now, then you have a fast day, then you have to fast till 12, and you didn't die. So then after many times of that practicing, then surviving till 9 o'clock becomes easier, right? But then the fasting till 12 is difficult. But then you have the fast until 6 o'clock, you know, so then that makes the 12 o'clock a little easier. And then when the 6 o'clock, you know, is a little difficult, then we have our fast till midnight, you know, and then that's, you know, slowly you push it so they become easier. So there's advantage to that, because you're doing that little extra, which is something, so the stableness is there. In normal times, you work for stableness, steadiness. But when there's a festival, then however much is your capacity that you could do and maintain within, then that's good. You know, if you completely do a dry fast on Janmashtami, and then halfway through the day you can't think and not be thinking, then better you drink water, but you know, something like that. Then better to take part in the program. If you can increase that, then that's okay. I saw one devotee that in their family they always did Ekadasi. So this person, it was years before I found out that every Ekadasi he never ate and chanted 64 rounds, because you wouldn't see him do any less service. His full service he would do. But just he'd get up earlier, chant, and then during Prasad he'd be chanting like this. And so, and he'd been doing that since he was like 8 years old. And so then, you know, when he's in his late 20s or 30s, then, you know, it's so practiced that he doesn't even think about it. So that was part of the tradition, that it was done from basically from, I think it's from 8 to 80. Then one can do this. Below 8, you don't worry. Above 80, you don't bother. You know, if you can do it, nice, but otherwise no one should complain. But the Ekadasi, doing that, the all-night one, when they do that, the Hari Bhaktivilas mentions that the day before on Dasami, you eat lunch, you don't eat anything at night. Right? Because if you do, you'll get thirsty the next day and all those different things. It gets hard to... So you eat then, you drink properly and all that, go to bed, you know, at a proper time. You get up the next morning, then you start. Then you stay up the whole night on Ekadasi. On Dwadasi, then, you break the fast in the morning, you don't eat. You eat at noontime. And then you don't sleep until the sun goes down. Once the sun goes down, you go to sleep. Because if you sleep before that, because you stayed up all night, then you'll have what now they call jet lag. So before they probably had Ekadasi lag, right? You know, it's just your clock is thrown off. But if you don't sleep, once the sun goes down, you sleep then the clock is immediately reset. And so that would be the full Ekadasi Vrata with the staying up all night. Because it includes Dasami and Dwadasi. But if they only take the staying up all night, then it's nice, but it's not as nice as the whole package. Yes.
And on Ekadasi morning, can you drink before the sun comes up?
You can drink if you're going to do a fast where you're not going to drink water, any of those. After you've had your bath, then you drink water then, and you won't drink again until the time that is there. Like if it's Janmashtami, until midnight, or if it's the Ekadasi, it won't be until the next day, it's 24 hours. So that's that. So like on this Nirjala Ekadasi, you drink some water in the morning, but it's part of the vrata. You drink the water that now I'm not drinking any more water. Like that. You know, so even if you drink, you know, 10 liters, it's still going to be gone in about 2-3 hours. So it's not that it's going to make it through the day. You know, it's still going to be austere. You know, so, but the point is it's a vrata, so it's not you sit down with a big jug of water and just, you know, drink away. It would be more you drink, and what you drink in that time, that's it. You know, it wouldn't be so much an endeavor. You know what I'm saying? It wouldn't be taken to that. It's like achman. You say achman. You don't remember some devotees, they had these, you used to be able to get them these huge cups and spoons like this big, you know. So then when they do achman, you know, they could seriously get a lot of water and stuff like that, you know. So, you know, so because all those things where you're actually contemplating the drinking of the water, then that's like drinking water underwater on a fast day, you know, because it's contemplation. The point is that drinking the water is part of the vrata. So the form is the vrata, not the drinking the water. So then one drinks the water, and then I won't drink again until this time, like that. So that's the. Yes.
If children, if they want to fast, should we encourage
them? You encourage them, and then when they decide they don't want to fast, then you feed them. Like that. You don't harass them that they're, just that they wanted to, that's good. You know, and then if they say, yeah, I'm going to fast today, and then at 10 o'clock they're hungry, you feed them. Like that. They made it till 10. Well, that's very nice, because if you do that, the next time they'll make it to 11. You know, and eventually they'll do it.
Feed them at
5 o'clock,
and feed them at 7.
Yeah, yeah, like that. Yeah, and that's after the last night's midnight snack, right? You know, so yeah. So if they want to, it means, in other words, anybody who is not known as being austere, if they want to be, it's encouraged, like that. And then when they can't do it, it's not expected anyway, it was a plus anyway. So it's just what they did, that's encouraged, right? Then they'll get inspired that it's a good thing. but it's a matter of, oh, you can't fast, you don't do this, then they won't get inspired to do it. Then they'll think their whole life they can never do it. Or if you encourage they do it, that's great, and then when they can't do it, then you say, oh, you're weak, you're this, you're that, then they'll also, you know, so it's just a matter of, you know, kids don't generally do so good at this. So when they want to do it, let them do it. And when they don't want to do it, then it's, so nothing's said either way. You know what I'm saying? It's, oh, that's very nice, and that, it's a nice devotee, this, that, blah. But then when it's not, then it's just a matter of prashad and this and that. You know, I mean, it's appropriate. You know, it's a codicy, they don't eat grains and stuff like that. Is that okay?
Up till, I mean, there's a saying that like babies are up to a certain age, even grains is not an issue.
It's not an issue, but kids will eat anything. You know, that's the thing, is basically they eat anything. So if they're trained that way, then they'll go that way. You know, but it's basically, you know, depends. If it's just if they're in the house, then from 8, then they should be following. If they're going to the school, then from 5, like that. But the normal thing is if all there is in the house to eat is non-grains, then generally, you know, that's the option, you know, but like that. So if the parents care for it and feel it's a good thing, then generally the kids will go in that direction. It's fairly simple. It's because a lot of times if it's like there's something to eat and so it's easier for the adult to give them some grains, then they get used to that and then it doesn't matter and then suddenly why does it change or that. So it's just like that. In other words, if a kid's out and there happened to be someone else's house, ate some grains, it's no big deal. You know, like that. But, you know, you train them to be careful and stuff like that. Because the idea is they have to learn discrimination. Like that. They can be encouraged in that. You know, how to develop that in that discrimination, etiquette, you know, all these proper attitude, all that they can be trained. Though they may not be very expert, but they can be encouraged in it. And like that.
Yeah, you said that if someone who's not known for austerity wants to perform austerity, then it's encouraged. But then when they can't do it, then it's just accepted as fine. So is it the same with other things, like if they get really enthusiastic about their sadhana or like that?
Yeah, same. Yeah, but here in general, it's like children will not necessarily be, much of the time, you know, you'll find ladies that can be quite austere and quite stable in that, but if they're not, it's not a big deal. You know what I'm saying? If the ladies have trouble fasting, it's not something to really worry about. A common person like that, they may not be so austere, so you don't worry about it. You know what I'm saying? But someone who has that ability to do it, then they should. You know, that is their duty to do it. But those that doesn't work so well, then, you know, as best they can do is what's done. You know what I'm saying? It's not an excuse, basically. Like that. Does that make some sense? Because we're speaking very broad here.
So that's in terms of austerity, but then in terms of, physical austerity, but then in terms of, you know, if someone wants to, you know, start chanting more rounds, or, you know, like if a kid wants to start going for Mangalati every day.
Yeah, no, those are things that are nice. Those are good.
Okay, but they shouldn't be expected.
It depends upon the environment, on the child, the nature of the child. It's, everything's nature. So you have to see is that at some point everybody should be able to do this, right? Because if they can't do that, then basically speaking, then it's very common. You know what I'm saying? It's not special. So devotee would be able to follow the basic sadhana, you know, basic chanting and basic rules like that. Doing something exceptional in that may not be expected, but the basics they can do. So someone, you know, the children growing up, as they grow up, they should be encouraged to move in that direction. It's not that then they waste their time. You know what I'm saying? It's not that during the Brahma Horta they yell and scream or play Monopoly and that. No, they can't do that. If they you know, they don't want to chant, they can sit there peacefully. You know what I'm saying? It's not this, it means there are rules, you know, there is human culture, there is human standards. So we use these certain times that they probably, just like we don't waste money, so we don't waste time. you know. But if it's in the times of the day, where it is where kids play and all that. If they're real little, that's another thing. That's 24/7. But as they get from 5 and above, then you have to start regulating their day. This is the time for play. This is the time for study. This is for sadhana. This is sleeping. This is eating, like that. But from 5, they can be regulated like that. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yes.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Harinath Chintamani also recommends observing festivals as a remedy for often being inattentive.
Well, inattentive would mean that one is, how do you say, absorbed in other things, but on a festival then, because it's a specific thing and it's not always there, then one would be, one could easily be more focused on it. So by that focus, then one could start to gain that daily focus on things you regularly do. Because you're chanting every day, so then it might become habit, but the festivals aren't every day. So then by focusing there and getting involved in those festivals, then one will be able to apply oneself better to one's daily sadhana. Is that okay?
Yes.
So the festivals, that's why they're part of the thing, part of the 64 items, is because they're very important in that way, because they develop all kinds of good qualities. But as we're saying in here, in this Raganuga, then it means one just likes to please Krishna. So this is his day, it's his festival, so therefore one wants to do something for him. One's not thinking of these other benefits. But if one is not on that platform, then being inspired by the benefits, then one is doing the same activity. It's just a matter of time before the mentality comes. Yeah? Okay, the Kartika said, okay, oh, we already did that one. In the Shikshastaka Bhasya, based on the Priti Sandarbha of Srila Jiva Goswami. Wow. Well, that's cool. Because that's what we're going to go into next, is the Shikshastaka Bhasya. Based on Priti Sandarbha of Srila Jiva Goswami, the development of Priti is described as follows. Undeveloped Priti in the first stage is called Ulasamayi, jubilant. It is called Rati. This type of Rati is present in Shantaras. When it appears, any other object than Krishna becomes very insignificant. When Ulasamayi, Rati, becomes extremely possessive, it is called Prema. This is present in Dasyarasa. When this develops, all causes for breaking the relationship become feeble. Means, in other words, you can have a relationship and things can go wrong in the relationship, so therefore one can break that relationship. Right? But here at Prema, then, because the possession element is there, then nothing will break it. You know, because it's just the attachment is so great. Like that. When prema becomes vishvasamayi, confidential, it is called pranay. It is suitable for sakya rasa. Right? Remember, we were discussing that the different rasas get up to certain levels. Okay. When pranay, confidentiality, manifests, there's no longer any reverence, even where reverence would be suitable. Right? So that what we can see is that the those in Dasyaras, they never get past prema. They come up to that platform because they can maintain the reverence. Though it's the one is very fixed, so we can see is that this is why then one doesn't fall from prema, because there's nothing that can break it, either in one's service or outside in, you know, material attraction, anything. There's nothing to disturb it. Okay, then confidential is pranay. Okay, then it goes into sakya. So you see the cowherd boys, is they're not famous for reverence, right? And that's also probably why you see in kids the element of reverence is not very prominent, right? That's the importance of the educational system, is you take him out of the house environment, though you still keep him in a home environment, but it's not the parents' home, right? It's the teacher's home. Then that confidentiality element is not there. Does that make sense? So reverence remains. Does that make sense? That's why there's a limit on why, on certain areas, the parents can't necessarily get the children to do. That's why in the Vedic system, you have mother, father, and teacher. That three is what makes it strong in raising the children, like that. The Western is that you're happy if you have mother and father, right? But the Vedic is you have all three, right? Because that makes it work very nicely. So many parents can't understand how the teacher is just as involved in the life as they are, because they have their natural attachment and everything. But as far as training goes and instruction, if the attachment is there for the parents, they will basically copy what the parents do. But to actually understand it, they may gain that from the parents, but they might not, because of the confidentiality. So then that's where the teacher then is able to bring it. Otherwise, we see as here is that this element of no longer any reverence, even where reverence would be suitable. Right? He doesn't say do, he just says it would be suitable. Right? When pranaya becomes variegated and becomes slightly devious due to taking the identity of a beloved of Krishna, it is called man, pride. Right? Slightly devious means it doesn't exactly, it's not directly, how do you say, expressed. Like up to this point, generally the expression is fairly straight, you know. You know, you have reverence for the Lord, you say that, you know, you want to go out and play, you know, play out in the forest with Krishna, you say that. But at this point of man, then you don't necessarily say what you mean. Right? So that's the element. Okay. So that, but it has that element of pride. That's why the only way to break pride is humility. Right? So the devotees manifest man, or pride. Krishna takes the position of humility. Understand? So that's how this is, because up to now, then you can apply the masculine feminine principle, but it'll be in its very formal state. But at this point, then the principle starts manifesting in its state, what we would call with the uniqueness of the masculine feminine relationship, like that, where it takes on those qualities of actually the conjugal relationship. Then we start seeing that it things switch. Right, like that. So that's what throws most people off, because it goes very nicely up to here. I'm going up and I'm becoming more and more God, you know. And then I get the wife, and then suddenly it switches. And at that point, what went wrong? Because it's supposed to just keep going like this, right? But it doesn't. That's why it makes it more fun. Because for Krishna, it's already gone in that way, so that's not so fun. So he switches it for more fun. So in other words, the whole family experience is actually meant for Krishna, because he can do it and survive. When we're trying to be Krishna, it's a little harder to survive, like that. Okay. So we didn't get through. Okay, so then I think we'll probably finish this on Thursday, then we'll start with the Shikshastika Bhasya.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. You need to get that. See what Preeti is supposed to. Did you get that one? You figured out which is the Shikshastika one?
The one which you have, that's okay. The Sarbhavana.
That is?
Yeah. And there is another one which is Bhana Maharaj. The same, there is the same matter. It's the same, I mean.
So it's things taken from Bhaktivinoda Thakura's Bhasya is what's taken from the Bhajan Rahasya.
Yeah, that's the one which you have.
Okay. But check the things if there's any more clear or technical, because many times Banumar is, though less sweet, is more technically correct. Sometimes in Sarva Bhavanas, sometimes things are so poetically presented, the technical aspect gets lost. Like in the Harinam Chintamani, that happens. You know, and the Adi Guru and all these different things, that the relationships between the various kinds of gurus, that gets a little lost. So can you just look and see if it's clear which one reads easier and stuff like that. Or whichever it is, then arrange that, and you know, so that there's a copy for here and he gets for the students. Because we'll start that as soon as we finish. We could finish this on Thursday, unless I blab too much, then we'll be like that. Something else? No?
How far is it right now? More than 1 minute.
Thank you.